pack was damp too. Also, with water round, there was no place to change. After a while, I got bored with watching the Delta. I turned and sat cross-legged, facing Walt. If we had some wood, we could start a campfire on Philip's back. Walt laughed.
I don't think he'd like that. Plus, I'm not sure we want to send up smoke signals.
You think we're being watched? His expression turned serious.
If I were Apophis, or even Sarah Jacoby...
He didn't need to finish that thought. Any number of villains wanted us dead. Of course they'd be looking for us. Walt rummaged through his collection of necklaces. I didn't notice the gentle curves of his mouth at all, or how his shirt clung to his chest in the humid air. No, all business, that's me. He chose an amulet shaped like an ibis, Toth's sacred animal. Walt whispered to it and threw it into the air. The charm expanded into a beautiful white bird with a long curved beak and black-tipped wings. It circled above us, buffeting my face with wind, then flew off slowly and gracefully over the wetlands. It reminded me of a stork from those old cartoons, the birds who bring babies in bundles. For some ridiculous reason, that thought made me blush. "You're sending it to scout ahead?" I guessed. Walt nodded.
"It'll look for the ruins of Sais. Hopefully they're close by."
"Unless Isis sent us to the wrong end of the Delta," I thought. Isis didn't reply, which was proof enough she was miffed. We glided upstream on Crocodile Cruise Line. Normally I wouldn't have felt uncomfortable having so much face time with Walt, but there was so much to say, and no good way to say it. Tomorrow morning, one way or another, our long fight against Apophis would be over. Of course, I was worried about all of us. I'd left Carter with the sociopathic ghost of Uncle Vinny. I hadn't even got up the courage to tell him that Zia occasionally became a fireball-lobbing maniac. I worried about Amos and his struggle with Set. I worried about our young initiates, virtually alone at the first gnome and no doubt terrified. I felt heartbroken for my father, who sat on his underworld throne grieving for our mother yet again. And of course, I feared for my mother's spirit, on the verge of destruction somewhere in the Duat. More than anything, I was concerned about Walt. The rest of us had some chance of surviving, however slim. Even if we prevailed, Walt was doomed. According to Setna, Walt might not even survive our trip to Sais. I didn't need anyone to tell me that. All I had to do was lower my vision into the Duat. A grey, sickly aura swirled around Walt, growing weaker and weaker. How long, I wondered, before he turned into the mummified vision I'd seen in Dallas. Then again, there was the other vision I'd seen at the Hall of Judgment. After talking to the Jackal Guardian, Walt had turned to me, and just for a moment I thought he was...
Anubis wanted to be there.
Walt interrupted my thoughts.
I mean, in the Hall of Judgment. He wanted to be there for you, if that's what you were wondering about.
I scowled. I was wondering about you, Walt Stone. You're running out of time, and we haven't had a proper talk about it. Even saying that much was difficult. Walt trailed his feet in the water. He'd set his shoes to dry on Philip's tail. Boys' feet are not something I find attractive, especially when they've just been removed from mucky trainers. However, Walt's feet were quite nice. His toes were almost the same colour as the swirling silt in the Nile. Carter is complaining about my comments on Walt's feet. Well, pardon me. It was easier to focus on his toes than on the sad look on his face.
Tonight, at the latest, he said. But Sadie, it's okay.
Anger swelled inside me, taking me quite by surprise. "Stop it!" I snapped. "It's not anywhere close to okay. Oh, yes, you've told me how grateful you are to have known me and learned magic at Brooklyn House and helped with the fight against Apophis. All very noble, but it's not..." My voice broke. "It's not okay." I pounded my fist on Philip's scaly back, which wasn't fair to the crocodile. Yelling at Walt wasn't fair either, but I was tired of tragedy. I wasn't designed for all this loss and sacrifice and horrible sadness. I wanted to throw my arms around Walt, but there was a wall between us, this knowledge that he was doomed. My feelings for him were so mixed up, I didn't know whether I was driven by simple attraction or guilt or, dare I say it, love, or stubborn determination not to lose someone else I cared about. Sadie. Wart gazed across the marshes. He looked quite helpless, and I suppose I couldn't blame him. I was being rather impossible. If I die for something I believe in, that's okay with me. But death doesn't have to be the end. I've been talking with Anubis, and gods of Egypt, not that again, I said. Please don't talk about him. I know exactly what he's been telling you. Wart looked startled. You do? And you don't like the idea? Of course not, I yelled. Wart looked absolutely crestfallen. Oh, come off it, I said. I know Anubis is the guide for the dead. He's been preparing you for the afterlife. He's told you that it'll be all right. You'll die a noble death, get a speedy trial, and go straight into ancient Egyptian paradise. Bloody wonderful. You'll be a ghost like my poor mother. Perhaps it's not the end of the world for you. If it makes you feel better about your fate, then fine. But I don't want to hear about it. I don't need another person I can't be with. My face was burning. It was bad enough that my mother was a spirit. I could never properly hug her again, never go shopping with her, never get advice about girls' sorts of things. Bad enough that I'd been cut off from Anubis, that horribly frustrating, gorgeous god who'd wrapped my heart into knots. Deep down, I'd always known a relationship with him was impossible, given our age difference, 5,000 years or so. But having the other gods decree him off-limits just rubbed salt in the wound. Now to think of Wart as a spirit, out of reach as well, that was simply too much. I looked up at him, afraid my bratty behaviour would have made him feel even worse. To my surprise, he broke into a smile. Then he laughed. What? I demanded. He doubled over, still laughing, which I found quite inconsiderate. You find this funny? I shouted. Wart Stone? No. He hugged his sides. No, it's just... You don't understand. It's not like that. Well, then, what is it like? He got control of himself. He seemed to be collecting his thoughts when his white ibis dived out of the sky. It landed on Philip's head, flapped its wings, and cawed. Walt's smile melted.
We're here. The ruins of Sais.
Philip carried us ashore. We put on our shoes and waded across the marshy ground. In front of us stretched a forest of palm trees, hazy in the afternoon light. Herons flew overhead. Orange and black bees hovered over the papyrus plants. One bee landed on Walt's arm. Several more circled his head. Walt looked more perplexed than worried.
The goddess who's supposed to live around here, Neat, didn't she have something to do with bees?
No idea, I admitted. For some reason I felt the urge to speak quietly. Yes, Carter, it was a first for me. Thanks for asking. I peered through the palm forest. In the distance, I thought I saw a clearing with a few clumps of mud bricks sticking above the grass like rotten teeth. I pointed them out to Walt. The remains of a temple? Walt must have felt the same instinct for stealth that I did. He crouched in the grass, trying to lower his profile. Then he glanced back nervously at Philip of Macedonia.
Maybe we shouldn't have a 3,000-pound crocodile trampling through the woods with us.
Agreed, I said. He whispered a command word. Philip shrank back to a small wax statuette. Walt pocketed our croc, and we began sneaking toward the ruins. The closer we got, the more bees filled the air. When we arrived at the clearing, we found an entire colony swarming like a living carpet over a cluster of crumbling mud-brick walls. Next to them, sitting on a weathered block of stone, a woman leaned on a bow, sketching in the dirt with an arrow. She was beautiful in a severe way, thin and pale, with high cheekbones, sunken eyes, and arched eyebrows, like a supermodel walking the line between glamorous and malnourished. Her hair was glossy black, braided on either side with flint arrowheads. Her haughty expression seemed to say, I'm much too cool to even look at you. There was nothing glamorous about her clothes, however. She was dressed for the hunt in desert-coloured fatigues, beige, brown, and ochre. Several knives hung from her belt, a quiver was strapped to her back, and her bow looked like quite a serious weapon, polished wood carved with hieroglyphs of power. Most disturbing of all, she seemed to be waiting for us.
You're noisy,
she complained. I could have killed you a dozen times already. I glanced at Walt, then back at the Huntress. Thanks? For not killing us, I mean. The woman snorted.
Don't thank me. You'll have to do better than that if you want to survive.
I didn't like the sound of that, but generally speaking, I don't ask heavily armed women to elaborate on such statements. Walt pointed to the symbol the Huntress was drawing in the dirt, an oval with four pointy bits like legs.
You're neat, Walt guessed. That's your symbol, the shield with crossed arrows.
The goddess raised her eyebrows.
Think much? Of course I'm neat. And yes, that's my symbol.
It looks like a bug, I said.
It's not a bug,
Neat glowered. Behind her, the bees became agitated, crawling over the mud bricks. You're right, I decided. Not a bug. Walt wagged his finger as if he'd just had a thought.
The bees. I remember now. That was one name for your temple, the House of the Bee.
Bees are tireless hunters,
Neat said.
Fearless warriors. I like bees.
Who doesn't? I offered. Charming little buzzers. But you see, we're here on a mission. I began to explain about Bess and his shadow. Neat cut me off with a wave of her arrow.
I know why you're here. The others told me.
I moistened my lips. The others?
Russian magicians, she said. They were terrible prey. After that, a few demons came by. They weren't much better. They all wanted to kill you.
I moved a step closer to Walt. I see. And so you...
Destroyed them, of course,
Neat said. Walt made a sound somewhere between a grunt and a whimper.
Destroyed them because they were evil, he said hopefully. You knew the demons and those magicians were working for Apophis, right? It's a conspiracy.
Of course it's a conspiracy, Neat said. They're all in on it. The mortals, the magicians, the demons, the tax collectors. But I'm onto them. Anyone who invades my territory pays.
She gave me a hard smile.
I take trophies.
From under the collar of her army jacket, she dug out a necklace. I winced, expecting to see some grisly bits of... Well, I don't even want to say... Instead, the cord was strung with ragged squares of cloth, denim, linen, silk.
Pockets,
Neat confided, a wicked gleam in her eyes. Walt's hands went instinctively to the sides of his workout pants.
You, took their pockets?
Do you think me cruel?
Neat asked.
Oh, yes. I collect the pockets of my enemies.
Horrifying, I said. I didn't know demons had pockets.
Oh, yes.
Neat glanced in either direction, apparently to be sure no one was eavesdropping.
You just have to know where to look.
Right, I said. So anyway, we've come to find Bess's shadow.
Yes,
the goddess said. And I understand you're a friend of Bess and Tawaret's.
That's true. I like them. They're ugly. I don't think they're in the conspiracy.
Oh, definitely not. So... Could you perhaps show us where Bess's shadow is?
I could. It dwells in my realm, in the shadows of ancient times.
In the... what now? I was so sorry, I asked. Neat knocked her arrow and shot it toward the sky. As it sailed upward, the air rippled. A shockwave spread across the landscape, and I felt momentarily dizzy. When I blinked, I found that the afternoon sky had turned a more brilliant blue, striped with orange clouds. The air was crisp and clean. Flocks of geese flew overhead. The palm trees were taller. The grass was greener. Yes, Carter, I know it sounds silly, but the grass really was greener on the other side. Where the mud brick ruins had been, a proud temple now stood. Walt, Neat, and I were just outside the walls, which rose 10 meters and gleamed brilliant white in the sun. The whole complex must have been at least a kilometre square. Halfway down the left wall, a gate glittered with gold filigree. A road lined with stone sphinxes led to the river, where sailboats were docked. Disorienting? Yes. But I'd had a similar experience once before, when I'd touched the curtains of light in the Hall of Ages. We're in the past, I guessed.
A shadow of it, Neat said. A memory. This is my refuge. It may be your burial ground, unless you survive the hunt.
I tensed. You mean you hunt us? But we're not your enemy. Bess is your friend. You should be helping us.
Sadie's right, Walt said. Apophis is your enemy. He's going to destroy the world tomorrow morning.
Neat snorted.
The end of the world. I've seen that coming for eons. You soft mortals have ignored the warning signs, but I'm prepared. I've got an underground bunker stockpiled with food, clean water, and enough weapons and ammunition to hold off a zombie army.
Walt knit his eyebrows. A zombie army?
You never know, Neat snapped. The point is, I'll survive the apocalypse. I can live off the land.
She jabbed a finger at me.
Did you know the palm tree has 6 different edible parts?
And I'll never be bored, Neat continued, since I'm also the goddess of weaving.
I have enough twine for a millennium of macrame.
I had no reply, as I wasn't sure what macrame was. Walt raised his hands.
Neat, that's great, but Apophis is rising tomorrow. He'll swallow the sun, plunge the world into darkness, and let the whole earth crumble back into the sea of chaos.
I'll be safe in my bunker, Neat insisted.
If you can prove to me that you're friend and not foe, maybe I'll help you with Bess. Then you can join me in the bunker. I'll teach you survival skills. We'll eat rations and weave new clothes from the pockets of our enemies.
Walt and I exchanged looks. The goddess was a nutter. Unfortunately, we needed her help. So you want to hunt us, I said, and we're supposed to survive
until sunset, she said. Evade me that long, and you can live in my bunker.
I've got a counteroffer, I said quickly. No bunker. If we win, you help us find Bess's shadow, but you'll also fight on our side against Apophis. If you're really a war goddess and a huntress and all that, you should enjoy a good battle.
Neat grinned. Done. I'll even give you a 5-minute head start, but I should warn you, I never lose. When I kill you, I'll take your pockets.
You drive a hard bargain, I said, but fine. Walt elbowed me.
Sadie?
I shot him a warning look. As I saw it, there was no way we could escape this hunt, but I did have an idea that might keep us alive.
We've begun, Neat cried. You can go anywhere in my territory, which is basically the entire Delta. It doesn't matter, I'll find you,
Walt said. But
4 minutes now, Neat said.
We did the only sensible thing. We turned and ran.
What is macrame? I yelled as we barreled through the rushes.
A kind of weaving, Walt said.
Why are we talking about this?
Dunno, I admitted. Just
The world turned upside down, or rather, I did.
I found myself hanging in a scratchy twine net with my feet in the air.
That's macrame, Walt said.
Lovely. Get me down. He pulled a knife from his pack, practical boy, and managed to free me, but I reckoned we'd lost most of our head start. The sun was lower on the horizon, but how long would we have to survive? 30 minutes? An hour?
Walt rifled through his pack and briefly considered the white wax crocodile.
Philip, maybe?
No, I said. We can't fight Neat head on. We have to avoid her. We can split
tiger, boat, sphinx, camels.
No invisibility, Walt muttered, examining his amulets. Why don't I have an amulet for invisibility?
I shuddered. The last time I'd tried invisibility, it hadn't gone very well.
Walt, she's a hunting goddess. We probably couldn't fool her with any sort of concealment spell, even if you had one.
Then what? He asked. I put my finger on Walt's chest and tapped the one amulet he wasn't considering, a necklace that was the twin to mine.
The Shen amulets? He blinked. But how can those help?
We split up and buy time, I said. We can share thoughts through the amulets, yes?
Well, yes.
And they can teleport us to each other's side, right?
Walt frowned. I designed them for that, but
if we split up,
I said. Neat will have to choose one of us to track. We get as far apart as possible. If she finds me first, you teleport me out of danger with the amulet, or vice versa. Then we split up again and we keep at it.
That's brilliant, Walt admitted.
If the amulets will work quickly enough, and if we can keep the mental connection, and if Neat doesn't kill one of us before we can call for help, and
I put my finger to his lips. Let's just leave it at that's brilliant. He nodded, then gave me a hasty kiss. Good luck. The silly boy shouldn't do things like that when I need to stay focused. He dashed off to the north, and, after a dazed moment, I ran south. Squishy combat boots are not the best for sneaking around. I considered wading into the river, thinking perhaps the water would obscure my trail, but I didn't want to go for a swim without knowing what was under the surface. Crocs, snakes, evil spirits. Carter once told me that most ancient Egyptians couldn't swim, which had seemed ridiculous to me at the time. How could people living next to a river not swim? Now I understood. No one in his right mind would want to take a dip in that water. Carter says a swim in the Thames or the East River would be almost as bad for your health. All right, fair point. Now shut up, brother dear, and let me get back to the brilliant Sadie saves the day part. I ran along the banks, crashing through reeds, jumping straight over a sunning crocodile. I didn't bother to check if it was chasing me. I had bigger predators to worry about. I'm not sure how long I ran. It seemed like miles. As the riverbank widened, I veered inland, trying to stay under the cover of the palm trees. I heard no signs of pursuit, but I had a constant itch in the middle of my shoulder blades where I expected an arrow. I stumbled through a clearing where some ancient Egyptians in loincloths were cooking over an open fire next to a small thatched hut. Perhaps the Egyptians were just shadows from the past, but they looked real enough. They seemed quite startled to see a blonde girl in combat clothes stumble into their encampment. Then they saw my staff and wand and immediately grovelled, putting their heads to the dirt and mumbling something about Per Ankh, the House of Life. Yes, I said. Per Ankh, official business. Carry on. Bye. Off I raced. I wondered if I would appear on a temple wall painting someday. A blonde Egyptian girl with purple highlights running sideways through the palm trees, screaming yikes in hieroglyphics as Neat chased after me. The thought of some poor archaeologist trying to figure that out almost lifted my spirits. I reached the edge of the palm forest and stumbled to a stop. Before me, ploughed fields spread into the distance, nowhere to run or hide. I turned back. Thunk! An arrow hit the nearest palm tree with such force that dates rained down on my head. Walt, I thought desperately. Now, please! 20 meters away, Neat rose from the grass. She had smeared river mud on her face, palm fronds stuck from her hair like bunny ears.
"I've hunted feral pigs with more skill than you," she complained. "I've hunted papyrus plants with more skill."
"Now, Walt," I thought. "Dear, dear Walt, now!" Neat shook her head in disgust. She knocked an arrow. I felt a tugging sensation in my stomach, as if I were in a car and the driver suddenly slammed on the brakes. I found myself sitting in a tree next to Walt, on the lowest bough of a large sycamore. "It worked," he said. "Wonderful, Walt!" I kissed him properly, or as properly as possible, given our situation. There was a sweet smell about him I hadn't noticed before, as if he'd been eating lotus blossoms. I imagined that old school rhyme, Walt and Sadie sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. Fortunately, anyone who might tease me was still 5,000 years in the future. Walt took a deep breath.
"Is that a thank you?"
"You look better," I noticed. His eyes weren't as yellow. He seemed to be moving with less pain. This should have delighted me, but instead it made me worried. "That lotus smell. Did you drink something?"
"I'm okay."
He looked away from me.
"We'd better split up and try again."
That didn't make me any less worried, but he was right. We had no time to chat. We both jumped to the ground and headed off in opposite directions. The sun was almost touching the horizon. I began to feel hopeful. Surely we wouldn't have to hold out much longer. I almost stumbled into another macrame net, but fortunately I was on the lookout for Neat's arts and crafts projects. I sidestepped the trap, pushed through a strand of papyrus plants, and found myself back at Neat's temple. The golden gates stood open. The wide avenue of sphinxes led straight into the complex. No guards, no priests. Maybe Neat had killed them all and collected their pockets, or perhaps they were all down in the bunker preparing for a zombie invasion. I reckon that the last place Neat might look for me was in her home base. Besides, Tawaret had seen Bessie's shadow up on those ramparts. If I could find the shadow without Neat's help, all the better. I ran for the gates, keeping a suspicious eye on the sphinxes. None of them came alive. Inside the massive courtyard were two freestanding obelisks tipped with gold. Between them glowered a statue of Neat in ancient Egyptian garb. Shields and arrows had been piled around her feet like spoils of war. I scanned the surrounding walls. Several stairways led up to the ramparts. The setting sun cast plenty of long shadows, but I didn't see any obvious dwarf silhouettes. Tawaret had suggested I call to the shadow. I was about to try when I heard Wart's voice in my mind. Sadie! It's awfully hard to concentrate when someone's life depends on you. I grasped the Shen amulet and muttered, "Come on, come on!" I pictured Wart standing next to me, preferably without an arrow in him. I blinked, and there he was. He almost knocked me down with a hug. She would have killed me, Wart gasped, but she wanted to talk first. She said she liked our trick. She was proud to slay us and take our pockets. Super, I said. Split up again? Wart glanced over my shoulder. Sadie, look. He pointed to the northwest corner of the walls, where a tower jutted from the ramparts. As the sky turned red, shadows slowly melted from the side of the tower. But one shadow remained, the silhouette of a stout little man with frizzy hair. I'm afraid we forgot our plan. Together we ran to the steps and climbed the wall. In no time we were standing on the parapet, staring at the shadow of Bess. I realized we must have been in the exact spot where Tawaret and Bess had held hands on the night Tawaret had described. Bess had told the truth. He'd left his shadow here so it could be happy, even when he wasn't. Oh, Bess. My heart felt like it was shrinking into a wax shapti. Wart, how do we capture it? A voice behind us said, "You don't." We turned. A few meters away, Neat stood on the ramparts. Two arrows were knocked in her bow. At this range, I imagined she'd have no trouble hitting us both at once. "A good try," she admitted, "but I always win the hunt." 14. Fun with split personalities. An excellent time to call on Isis? Perhaps. But even if Isis had answered, I doubted I could summon any magic faster than Neat could shoot, and on the off chance I actually defeated the Huntress, I had the feeling Neat would consider it cheating if I used another goddess's power against her. She'd probably decide I was part of the Russian zombie tax collector conspiracy. As mad as Neat was, we needed her help. She'd be much more useful shooting arrows at Apophis than sitting in her bunker making jackets out of our pockets and knotted twine. My mind raced. How to win over a hunter? I didn't know much about hunters, except for old Major McNeil, Gramps's friend from the pensioner's home, who used to tell stories constantly about... Ah! It's a shame, really, I blurted out. Neat hesitated, as I hoped she would. What is? She asked. 6 edible parts of a palm tree. I laughed. It's 7, actually. Neat frowned. Impossible! Oh, yes, I raised my eyebrows. Have you ever lived off the land in Covent Garden? Have you ever trekked through the wilds of Camden Lock and lived to tell about it? Neat's bow dipped ever so slightly. I do not know those places. I thought not, I said triumphantly. Oh, the stories we could have shared, Neat, the tips for survival. Once I went for a whole week on nothing but stale biscuits and the juice of the ribena. Is that a plant? Neat asked. With every nutrient you need for survival, I said, if you know where to buy... I mean, harvest it. I lifted my wand, hoping she would see this as a dramatic move, not a threat. Why, once, in my bunker at Charing Cross Station, I stalked the deadly prey known as jelly babies. Neat's eyes widened.
They are dangerous? Horrible.
I agreed. Oh, they seem small alone, but they always appear in great numbers, sticky, fattening, quite deadly. There I was, alone with only 2 quid and a tube pass, beset by jelly babies. Then... ah, but never mind. When the jelly babies come for you, you will find out on your own. She lowered her bow.
Tell me, I must know how to hunt jelly babies.
I looked at Walt gravely. How many months have I trained you, Walt?
7, he said. Almost 8.
And have I ever deemed you worthy of hunting jelly babies with me?
No.
There you have it. I knelt and began tracing on the rampart floor with my wand. Even Walt is not ready for such knowledge. I could draw for you here a picture of the dreaded jelly baby, or even, gods forbid, the Jacob's digestive cream. But that knowledge might destroy a lesser hunter.
I am the goddess of hunting.
Neat inched closer, staring in awe at the glowing markings, apparently not realizing I was making protective hieroglyphs.
I must know.
Well, I glanced at the horizon. First, you must understand the importance of timing.
Yes, Neat said eagerly. Tell me of this.
For instance, I tapped the hieroglyphs and activated my spell. It's sunset. We're still alive. We win.
Neat's expression hardened. Trickery.
She lunged at me, but the protective glyphs flared, pushing back the goddess. She raised her bow and shot her arrows. What happened next was surprising on many levels. First, the arrows must have been heavily enchanted because they sailed right through my defenses. Second, Walt lunged forward with impossible speed. Faster than I could scream, which I did, Walt snatched the arrows out of the air. They crumbled to grey dust, scattering in the wind. Neat stepped back in horror.
It's you. This is unfair.
We won, Walt said. Honor your agreement. A look passed between them that I didn't quite understand, some sort of contest of wills. Neat hissed through clenched teeth.
Very well, you may go. When Apophis rises, I will fight at your side. But I will not forget how you trespassed on my territory, child of Set. And you,
she glared at me.
I lay this hunter's curse upon you. Some day you will be tricked by your prey, as I have been tricked today. May you be set upon by a pack of wild jelly babies.
With that terrifying threat, Neat dissolved into a pile of twine. Child of Set? I narrowed my eyes at Walt. What exactly?
Look out, he warned.
All around us, the temple began to crumble. The air rippled as the magic shockwave contracted, transforming the landscape back to present-day Egypt. We barely made it to the base of the stairs. The last walls of the temple were reduced to a pile of worn mud bricks, but the shadow of Bess was still visible against them, slowly fading as the sun went down.
We need to hurry, Walt said.
Yes, but how do we capture it? Behind us, someone cleared his throat. Anubis leaned against a nearby palm tree, his expression grim.
I'm sorry to intrude, but, Walt, it's time.
Anubis was sporting the formal Egyptian look. He wore a golden neck collar, a black kilt, sandals, and pretty much nothing else. As I've mentioned before, not many boys could pull off this look, especially with coal eyeliner, but Anubis managed. Suddenly his expression turned to alarm. He sprinted toward us. For a moment I had an absurd vision of myself on the cover of one of Grand's old romance novels, where the damsel wilts into the arms of one half-dressed beefy guy while another stands by, casting her longing looks. Oh, the horrible choices a girl must make. I wished I'd had a moment to clean up. I was still covered in dried river muck, twine and grass, like I'd been tarred and feathered. Then Anubis pushed past me and gripped Walt's shoulders. Well, that was unexpected.
I quickly realized, however, that he'd stopped Walt from collapsing. Walt's face was beaded with sweat. His head drooped and his knees gave out as if someone had cut the last string holding him together. Anubis lowered him gently to the ground.
"Walt, stay with me," Anubis urged. "We have business to finish."
"Business to finish?" I cried. I'm not sure what came over me, but I felt as if I'd just been photoshopped out of my own book cover. And if there was one thing I wasn't used to, it was being ignored. "Anubis, what are you doing here? What is going on with you two? And what bloody business?" Anubis frowned at me as if he'd forgot my presence. That didn't do much to help my mood.
"Sadie, I tried to tell her,"
Walt groaned. Anubis helped him sit up, though Walt still looked awful.
"I see," Anubis said. "Couldn't get a word in edgewise, I guess."
Walt managed a weak smile.
"You should have seen her talking to Neat about jelly babies. She was like, I don't know, a verbal freight train. The goddess never stood a chance."
"Yes, I saw," Anubis said. "It was endearing in an annoying sort of way." "I beg your pardon. I wasn't sure which of them to slap first."
"And when she turns red like that," Anubis added, as if I was some interesting specimen.
"Cute," Walt agreed.
"So, have you decided?" Anubis asked him. "This is our last chance."
"Yes. I can't leave her."
Anubis nodded and squeezed his shoulder.
"Neither can I. But the shadow first?"
Walt coughed, his face contorting in pain.
"Yes. Before it's too late."
I can't pretend I was thinking clearly, but one thing was obvious. These two had been talking behind my back much more than I'd realized. What on earth had they been telling each other about me? Forget Apophis swallowing the sun. This was my ultimate nightmare. How could they both not leave me? Hearing that from a dying boy and a god of death sounded quite ominous. They'd formed some sort of conspiracy. Oh, Lord, I was beginning to think like Neat. Soon I'd be huddled in an underground bunker, eating army rations and cackling as I sewed together the pockets of all the boys who jilted me. With difficulty, Anubis helped Walt over to the shadow of Bess, now rapidly disappearing in the twilight.
"Can you do it?" Anubis asked.
Walt murmured something I couldn't make out. His hands were shaking, but he pulled a block of wax from his bag and began kneading it into a shapti.
"Setna tried to make it sound so complicated, but I see now. It's simple. No wonder the gods wanted this knowledge kept out of mortal hands."
"Excuse me," I interrupted. They both looked at me. "Hi, I'm Sadie Kane," I said. "I don't mean to barge in on your chummy conversation, but what in blazes are you doing?"
"Capturing Bess's shadow," Anubis told me.
"But..." I couldn't seem to make words come out. So much for being a verbal freight train. I'd become a verbal train wreck. "But if that's the business you were talking about, then what was all that about deciding and leaving me and..."
"Sadie," Walt said, "we're going to lose the shadow if I don't act now. You need to watch the spell so you can do this with the shadow of the serpent."
"You're not going to die, Walt Stone. I forbid it."
"It's a simple incantation,"
he continued, quite ignoring my plea.
"A regular summons with the words Shadow of Bess substituted for Bess. After the shadow is absorbed, you'll need a binding spell to anchor it. Then..."
"Walt, stop it!" He was shivering so badly his teeth chattered. "How could he think about giving me a magic lesson now?"
"Then, for the execration," he said, "you'll need to be in front of Apophis. The ritual is exactly the same as normal. Setna lied about that part. There's nothing special about his enchantment. The only hard part is finding the shadow. For Bess, just reverse the spell. You should be able to cast it from a distance, since it's a beneficial spell. The shadow will want to help you. Send out the Shoot to find Bess, and it should... it should bring him back."
"But..."
"Sadie."
Anubis put his arms around me. His brown eyes were full of compassion.
"Don't make him talk more than he has to. He needs his strength for this spell."
Walt began to chant. He raised the lump of wax, which now resembled a miniature Bess, and pressed it against the shadow on the wall. I sobbed, "But he'll die!" Anubis held me. He smelled of temple incense, copal and amber and other ancient fragrances.
He was born under the shadow of death, Anubis said. That's why we understand each other. He would have collapsed long before now, but Jazz gave him one last potion to hold off the pain, to give him a final burst of energy in an emergency. I remembered the sweet smell of lotus on Walt's breath. He took it just now, when we were running from Neat. Anubis nodded. It's worn off. He'll only have enough energy to finish this spell.
No! I meant to scream and hit him, but I'm afraid I rather melted and wept instead. Anubis sheltered me in his arms, and I snivelled like a little girl. I have no excuse. I simply couldn't stand the thought of losing Walt, even to bring back Bess. Just once, couldn't I succeed at something without a massive sacrifice?
You have to watch, Anubis told me. Learn the spell. It's the only way to save Bess. And you'll need the same enchantment to capture the serpent's shadow.
I don't care, I cried, but I did watch. As Walt chanted, the figurine absorbed the shadow of Bess like a sponge soaking up liquid. The wax turned as black as coal.
Don't worry, Anubis said gently. Death won't be the end for him.
I pounded on his chest without much force. I don't want to hear that. You shouldn't even be here. Didn't the gods put a restraining order on you?
I'm not supposed to be near you, Anubis agreed, because I have no mortal form.
How then? There's no graveyard. This isn't your temple.
No, Anubis admitted. He nodded at Walt. Look, Walt finished his spell. He spoke a single command word. Hynim. The hieroglyph for join together blazed silver against the dark wax. It was the same command I'd used to repair the gift shop in Dallas, the same command Uncle Amos had used last Christmas when he had demonstrated how to put a broken saucer back together. And with horrible certainty, I knew it would be the last spell Walt ever cast.
He slumped forward. I ran to his side. I cradled his head in my arms. His breathing was ragged.
Worked, he muttered. Now, send the shadow to Bess.
You'll have to... Walt, please, I said. We can get you to the first gnome. Their healers might be able to...
No, Sadie.
He pressed the figurine into my hands.
Hurry.
I tried to concentrate. It was almost impossible, but I managed to reverse the wording of an execration. I channeled power into the figurine and imagined Bess as he once was. I urged the shadow to find its master, to reawaken his soul. Instead of erasing Bess from the world, I tried to draw him back into the picture, this time with permanent ink. The wax statue turned to smoke and disappeared. Did it work? I asked.
Walt didn't answer. His eyes were closed. He lay perfectly still.
Oh, please, no. I hugged his forehead, which was rapidly cooling. Anubis, do something.
No answer. I turned, and Anubis was gone.
Anubis!
I screamed so loudly it echoed off the distant cliffs.
I set Walt down as gently as I could. I stood and turned in a full circle, my fists clenched. That's it! I shouted at the empty air. You take his soul and leave! I hate you!
Suddenly Walt gasped and opened his eyes. I sobbed with relief.
Walt!
I knelt next to him. The gate, he said urgently. I didn't know what he meant. Perhaps he'd had some sort of near-death vision. His voice sounded clearer, free of pain, but still weak. Sadie, hurry. You know the spell now. It will work on the serpent's shadow.
Walt, what happened?
I brushed the tears from my face.
What gate?
He pointed feebly. A few meters away, a door of darkness hovered in the air. The whole quest was a trap, he said.
Setna, I see his plan now. Your brother needs your help.
But what about you? Come with me!
He shook his head.
I'm still too weak. I will do my best to summon reinforcements for you in the Duat. You'll need them, but I can barely move. I'll meet you at sunrise at the first gnome, if you're sure you don't hate me.
Hate you? I was completely baffled. Why on earth would I hate you?
He smiled sadly, a smile that wasn't quite like him.
Look, he said.
It took me a moment to understand his meaning. A cold feeling washed over me. How had Walt survived?
Where was Anubis, and what had they been conspiring about? Neat had called Walt a child of Set, but he wasn't. Set's only child was Anubis.
I tried to tell her, Walt had said. He was born under the shadow of death, Anubis had told me. That's why we understand each other. I didn't want to, but I lowered my vision into the Duat. Where Walt lay, I saw a different person, like a superimposed image. A young man lying weak and pale in a gold neckband and black Egyptian kilt, with familiar brown eyes and a sad smile. Deeper still, I saw the glowing grey radiance of a god, the jackal-headed form of Anubis. Oh, no, no! I got up and stumbled away from him. From them? Too many puzzle pieces fell together at once. My head was spinning. Walt's ability to turn things to dust. It was the path of Anubis. He'd been channeling the god's power for months. Their friendship, their discussions, the other way Anubis hinted at for saving Walt. What have you done? I stared at him in horror. I wasn't even sure what to call him.
Sadie, it's me, Walt said. Still me.
In the Duat, Anubis spoke in unison,
"Still me."
No! My legs trembled. I felt betrayed and cheated. I felt as if the world was already crumbling into the sea of chaos.
"I can explain," he said in two voices, "but Carter needs your help. Please, Sadie,
stop it!" I'm not proud of how I acted, but I turned and fled, leaping straight through the doorway of darkness. At the moment, I didn't even care where it led, as long as it was away from that deathless creature I had thought I loved.
15. I become a purple chimpanzee. Jelly babies? Seriously? I hadn't heard that part. My sister never ceases to amaze me. And no, Sadie, that's not a compliment either. Anyway, while Sadie was having her supernatural guy drama, I was confronting an axe-murdering riverboat captain who apparently wanted to change his name to Even More Bloodstained Blade. "Back down," I told the demon. "That's an order." Bloodstained Blade made a humming sound that might have been laughter. He swung his head to the left, kind of an Elvis Presley dance move, and smashed a hole in the wall. Then he faced me again, splinters all over his shoulders. "I have other orders," he hummed. "Orders to kill." He charged like a bull. After the mess we'd just been through in the Serapeum, a bull was the last thing I wanted to deal with. I thrust out my fist. "Hawi!" The hieroglyph for strike glowed between us. A blue fist of energy slammed into Bloodstained Blade, pushing him out the door and straight through the wall of the opposite stateroom. A hit like that would have knocked out a human, but I could hear BSB digging out from the rubble, humming angrily. I tried to think. It would have been nice to keep smashing him with that hieroglyph over and over, but magic doesn't work that way. Once spoken, a divine word can't be used again for several minutes, sometimes even hours. Besides, divine words are top-of-the-line magic. Some magicians spend years mastering a single hieroglyph. I'd learned the hard way that saying too many will burn through your energy really fast, and I didn't have much to spare. First problem, keep the demon away from Zia. She was still half-conscious and totally defenseless. I summoned as much magic as I could and said, "Nda! Protect!" Blue light shimmered around her. I had a horrible flashback to when I found Zia in her watery tomb last spring. If she woke up encased in blue energy and thought she was imprisoned again? "Oh, Zia," I said, "I didn't mean..." "Kill!" Bloodstained Blade rose from the wreckage of the opposite room. A feather pillow was impaled on his head, raining goose fluff all over his uniform. I dashed into the hall and headed for the stairs, glancing back to be sure the captain was following me and not going after Zia. Lucky me, he was right on my tail. I reached the deck and yelled, "Setna!" The ghost was nowhere to be seen. The crew lights were going crazy, buzzing around frantically, bonking into walls, looping around the smokestacks, lowering and raising the gangplank for no apparent reason. I guess without Bloodstained Blade to give them directions, they were lost. The riverboat careened down the river of night, weaving drunkenly in the current. We slipped between two jagged rocks that would have pulverized the hull, then dropped over a cataract with a jaw-rattling thunk. I glanced up at the wheelhouse and saw no one steering. It was a miracle that we hadn't crashed already. I had to get the boat under control. I ran for the stairs. When I was halfway there, Bloodstained Blade appeared out of nowhere. He sliced his head across my gut, ripping open my shirt. If I'd had a larger belly... No, I don't want to think about it. I stumbled backward, pressing my hand against my navel. He'd only grazed the skin, but the sight of blood on my fingers made me feel faint. Some warrior, I scolded myself. Fortunately, Bloodstained Blade had embedded his axe head in the wall. He was still trying to tug it free, grumbling, "New orders, kill Carter Kane. Take him to the land of demons. Make sure it's a one-way trip." The land of demons? I bolted up the stairs and into the wheelhouse. All around the boat, the river churned into whitewater rapids. A pillar of stone loomed out of the fog and scraped against our starboard side, ripping off part of the railing. We twisted sideways and picked up speed. Somewhere ahead of us, I heard the roar of millions of tons of water cascading into oblivion. We were rushing toward a waterfall. I looked around desperately for the shore. It was hard to see through the thick fog and gloomy gray light of the Duat, but 100 yards or so off the bow, I thought I saw fires burning and a dark line that might have been a beach. The land of demons sounded bad, but not as bad as dropping off a waterfall and getting smashed to pieces. I ripped the cord off the alarm bell and lashed the pilot's wheel in place, pointing us toward the shore. "Kill Kane." The captain's well-polished boot slammed me in the ribs and sent me straight through the port window. Glass shattered, raking my back and legs. I bounced off a hot smokestack and landed hard on the deck. My vision blurred. The cut across my stomach stung. My legs felt like they'd been used for a tiger's chew toy, and judging from the hot pain in my side, I may have broken some ribs in the fall. All in all, not my best combat experience. "Hello?" Horace spoke in my mind. "Any intention of calling for help, or are you happy to die on your own?" "Yeah," I snapped back at him. "The sarcasm is real helpful." Truthfully, I didn't think I had enough energy left to summon my avatar, even with Horace's help. My fight with the Apis Bull had nearly tapped me out, and that was before I got chased by an axe demon and kicked out a window. I could hear Bloodstained Blade stomping his way back down the stairs. I tried to rise and almost blacked out from the pain. "A weapon," I told Horace. "I need a weapon." I reached into the Duat and pulled out an ostrich feather. "Really?" I yelled. Horace didn't answer. Meanwhile, the crew lights zipped around in a panic as the boat barreled toward the shore. The beach was easier to see now. Black sand, littered with bones and plumes of volcanic gas shooting from fiery crevices. Oh, good. Just the sort of place I wanted to crash land. I dropped the ostrich feather and reached into the Duat again. This time I pulled out a pair of familiar weapons, the crook and flail, symbols of the pharaoh. The crook was a gold and red shepherd's rod with a curved end. The flail was a pole arm with 3 wicked-looking spiked chains. I'd seen lots of similar weapons. Every pharaoh had a set. But these looked disturbingly like the original pair, the weapons of the sun god that I'd found last spring buried in Zia's tomb. "What are these doing here?" I demanded. "These should be with Ra." Horace remained silent. I got the feeling he was as surprised as I was. Bloodstained Blade stormed around the side of the wheelhouse. His uniform was ripped and covered in feathers. His blades had some new nicks, and he'd gotten the emergency bell wrapped around his left boot so it clanged as he walked. But he still looked better than me.
"Enough," he hummed. "I have served the Canes too long."
Toward the bow of the ship, I heard the crank, crank, crank of the gangplank lowering. I glanced over and saw Setna strolling calmly across as the river churned beneath him. He stopped at the edge of the plank and waited as the boat raced toward the black sand beach. He was preparing to jump to safety. And tucked under his arm was a large papyrus scroll, the Book of Thoth. "Setna!" I screamed. He turned and waved, smiling pleasantly.
"It'll be fine, Carter. I'll be right back."
"Toss!" I yelled. Instantly, the ribbons of Hathor encased him, scroll and all, and Setna pitched overboard into the water. I hadn't planned on that, but I didn't have time to worry about it. Bloodstained Blade charged, his left foot going clump, bong, clump, bong. I rolled sideways as his axe head cut the floor, but he recovered more quickly than I could. My ribs felt like they'd been dipped in acid. My arm was too weak to lift Ra's flail. I raised the crook for defense, but I had no idea how to use it. Bloodstained Blade loomed over me, humming with evil glee. I knew I couldn't evade another attack. I was about to become two separate halves of Carter Kane.
"We are done," he bellowed.
Suddenly, he erupted in a column of fire. His body vaporized. His metal axe head dropped, impaling itself in the deck between my feet. I blinked, wondering if this was some sort of demon trick, but Bloodstained Blade was truly and completely gone. Beside the axe head, all that remained were his polished boots, a slightly melted alarm bell, and some charred goose feathers floating in the air. A few feet away, Zia leaned against the wheelhouse. Her right hand was wrapped in flames.
"Yes," Zia muttered to the smoking axe blade. "We are done."
She extinguished her fire, then stumbled over and embraced me. I was so relieved I could almost ignore the searing pain in my side.
"You're okay," I said, which sounded dumb under the circumstances, but she rewarded me with a smile. "Fine," she said. "Had a moment of panic. Woke up with blue energy all around me, but..."
I happened to glance behind her, and my stomach turned inside out. "Hold on!" I yelled. The Egyptian queen rammed into the shore at full speed. I now understand the whole thing about wearing seatbelts. Hanging on did absolutely no good. The boat ran aground with such force, Zia and I shot into the air like human cannonballs. The hull cracked apart behind us with an almighty kablam! The landscape hurtled toward my face. I had half a second to contemplate whether I would die by smacking into the ground or falling into a flaming crevice. Then, from above me, Zia grabbed my arm and hoisted me skyward. I caught a glimpse of her, grim-faced and determined, holding on to me with one hand and hanging from the talons of a giant vulture with the other. Her amulet. I hadn't thought about it in months, but Zia had a vulture amulet. She'd somehow managed to activate it because she's just awesome that way. Unfortunately, the vulture wasn't strong enough to hold two people aloft. It could only slow our fall, so instead of being smashed flat, Zia and I rolled hard against the black sandy soil, tumbling over each other right to the edge of a fiery crevice. My chest felt like it had been stomped flat. Every muscle in my body ached, and I had double vision. But to my amazement, the sun god's crook and flail were clasped tightly in my right hand. I hadn't even realized I still had them. Zia must have been in better shape than me. Of course, I'd seen roadkill in better shape than me. She found the strength to drag me away from the fissure and down toward the beach.
Ouch, I said. Lie still. She spoke a command word, and her vulture shrank back into a charm. She rummaged through her backpack. She brought out a small ceramic jar and began rubbing blue paste on the cuts, burns, and bruises that covered my upper body. The pain in my side eased immediately. The wounds disappeared. Zia's hands were smooth and warm. The magical unguent smelled like blossoming honeysuckle. It wasn't the worst experience I'd had all day. She scooped another dollop of salve and looked at the long cut across my stomach.
You should do this part.
She scraped the salve onto my fingers and let me apply it. The gash mended.